Are you taking this check, shirt?
What do you reckon?
I reckon the whole trip's a waste of time.
Yes, but Pauline...
Pauline doesn't know everything.
She knows it's sometimes right to take risks, whereas you're always the sensible one.
You used to value that about me.
I'm gonna do this. Are you on my side or not?
I'm always on your side.
You could come with me as far as the boat, if you like.
No, I think I'm better off here.
Suit yourself.
When Ernest finally wrote from New York, it was with good news. Scribner's thought Torrance was a grand book and had offered $1,500 advance against royalties, with the new bullfighting book now titled The Sun Also Rises as a package, which was more money than we'd ever dreamed of getting. Ernest's ship landed at Le Havre in early March, but he didn't come back to Austria immediately. There were friends to see in Paris, after all, Scott and Zelda, Gerald and Sarah Murphy, and of course Pauline. But he was glad when he got back to Bumby and me.
I like your hair like that. It looks quite wild.
I'm going to give a concert when we get back to Paris. I have been practicing every day.
Oh, that's fantastic. You'll be great. A real star.
We'll both be stars.
We lay down on the feather bed and I watched him fall asleep. I could see the child he used to be under the man, and I loved them both, simply and completely and irreversibly. I crept into the place beneath his arm that felt so right and let myself sleep. In the last few weeks, I'd spent every spare moment preparing my concert pieces. We told everyone we knew, and the hall was nearly sold out. Meanwhile, Ernest was putting all his effort into finishing the novel. We were both pretty tired, and he was preoccupied with his work. So when Pauline proposed a trip visiting Chateau in the Loire, he encouraged me to go. The trip started well, but Pauline's mood soon changed.
Can we leave, please? I'm bored with looking at old things.
Are you coming down with something? You seem a bit out of sorts.
I'm absolutely fine.
Oh, well, you don't look
it. I said I was fine, didn't I? For God's sake, stop fussing.
It says here in the guidebook that the carpets are Persian. Persian splendor, it says here.
Oh, shut up, will you, Hadley? For God's sake, shut up.
I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. It is me who should be sorry. Oh, bloody hell.
That's when it suddenly dawned on me that Pauline was in love with my husband. When we got back to Paris, she drove to the apartment and dropped me there. She didn't ask to come up, and I didn't offer.
You're in love with Pauline. Well, aren't you?
I refuse to answer that.
Why not, if it's true?
Who gives a damn what's true? There are some things you shouldn't say.
What about the things you shouldn't do? What about the promises you made?
Oh, don't do that guilt thing. If you think you can make me feel worse than I already feel, you'll have to try much harder.
Oh, God damn you! God damn you to hell!
And I guess he will.
Ernest never came to bed that night. And in the morning, when I got up, he had already left. Late in the afternoon, when he came home, he said he'd got a draft of a new story. In the middle of all that was happening to us, he'd gone out and written a damn story. As for me, though I felt like a coward doing it, I knew I had to cancel the concert. How could I possibly go ahead without breaking down in front of everyone we knew?
The theater's booked. You can't back out.
I can and I will.
Everyone will talk.
They're probably doing that already.
To hell with them. Nothing hurts if you don't let it.
Have you told Pauline yet?
Well, that you know... Not yet.
Well, you should. No doubt she'll come up with one of her brilliant plans.
You better watch out, you
don't
know.
Don't you dare tell me what to do.
Oh, for God's sake, let's have a brandy.
Soon after, Ernest left for Madrid. He kept writing, asking me and Bumby to join him, but I wasn't in the mood to wait things out in a hotel room, particularly if I had to see cables arriving for him from Pauline every day. The weather turned glorious, but I couldn't get out and enjoy it. Bumby had fallen ill. It began with sniffles, but soon turned to fever and a terrible cough. Every few days, there would be a cable from Ernest.
Feeling miserable. Stop. Bull sick. Stop. Feeling like a sick bull. Stop. Need you and Bumby. Stop. P.S. Have finished 3 stories. Repeat. Need you. Stop.
I wrote back saying Bumby wasn't well enough to travel. Near the end of May, he seemed slightly better, so we packed our bags and went off to Gerald and Sarah Murphy's villa in Cap d'Antibes to join them and the Fitzgeralds in the sunshine.
Hadley, sweetheart, and darling little Bumby. Isn't it just divine here? You simply must try the olives. They're quite heavenly. And I'll get Scotty to fix you a long, cool drink with plenty of fresh lemon juice.
Bumby's cough persisted. Eventually, the Murphy's doctor diagnosed whooping cough. Soon after that, Ernest arrived from Madrid. I didn't ask what he'd decided to do about Pauline, and because I didn't, and that was the principal thing at stake in our lives, I felt absolutely powerless. Over the coming week or so, she wrote to us most days.
Dearest Hash and Drum, there's absolutely nothing to do in Paris. No one's here at all, and I miss you terribly. I'm not in the slightest little bit afraid of the whooping cough because I had it when I was a child, and you can't get it twice, so couldn't I come and share your quarantine? I promise to be good.
She arrived in Antibes on a blindingly clear afternoon. She wore a white dress and a white straw hat. She seemed impossibly fresh, like a dish of ice cream. She was not in any way self-conscious about pitching up in this way. She knew what she wanted and would find a way to get it.
Pauline, it's great to see you. How's Paris?
Boring.
We missed you.
Some of us missed you an awful lot.
This wasn't my world. These weren't my kind of people. But they were drawing Ernest in and in with every passing day. Pauline suggested that she and I take out our bikes after breakfast while Ernest wrote. It seemed outrageous, but somehow she kept up the pretense that we were still friends. We swam together, sunbathed together with Bumby, all as if nothing had changed.
Come on, let's get you some figs. They're simply heaven. Oh, and wait until you taste the black olives. They're beyond heaven.
I must have heard her say, "It's heaven," 1,000 times that summer until I wanted to scream. When she and I came back from cycling or swimming, she'd excuse herself to change for lunch, but then went to Ernest's studio instead. They probably had a secret knock. That's what I imagined, though it made me sick to do it. It was all so modulated and discreet that I wondered if she took a secret pleasure in playing her role, as if she was a great actress starring in a gripping drama. More and more, I found myself at a loss for words, and I didn't want to hear the others talking either. Their conversations seemed false and empty.
Who doesn't love Longfellow?
I don't. Well, who the hell is Longfellow?
Oh, that's caviar. Oh. Now, what the blazes would we do without caviar?
No, do shut up, darling. And please sit down before you fall down.
Okay, honey, okay. Oh, say, Gerald, old chap, how about you shuck me an oyster? I'm simply famished.
I preferred to look at the sea, which said nothing and never made you feel alone.
I've been trying to talk Drum into coming to the States in the fall. You know my folks have got some land in Arkansas. The living is so cheap there, you'd save a fortune.
You can save your breath. He'd rather cut off his arm than go home.
Well, actually, he thinks it's a fine idea.
Oh, he does he? And you would know that, of course. What the hell do you think you're doing?
I was only trying to help. Surely you can see that.
One afternoon, when Ernest and I were napping, Pauline crept into our room. I'd been having a dream in which I was being buried alive under tons of sand. I didn't even know Pauline was in the room until she'd slipped under the sheets on Ernest's side of the bed. The afternoons were hot and we slept naked. I knew perfectly well what was happening, but I didn't want to come awake enough to acknowledge it. No one spoke or made any noise. The bed was sand, I told myself. The sheets were sand. I was still in the dream.
Breaking up? I don't believe it. Not you guys. I thought you guys were rock solid.
So did I.
It can't be. I won't allow it.
It can, and it is. But I could sure use another martini.
Back in Paris, I rented two rooms at the Hotel Beauvoir. One for me, one for Bumby. The next day, I walked to Gerald's studio where Ernest was at work.
Taddy.
I want you and Pauline to agree not to see each other for 100 days. You can't see her, and you can't write her. And if you're still in love with her after the 100 days, I will give you a divorce.
But even that I couldn't stick to. Dearest Taddy, I love you more than I ever have in some ways. And though different people view their marriage vows differently, I meant mine to the death. But since you've fallen in love and want to marry someone else, I feel I have no choice but to move aside and let you do that. The 100 days are officially off. You can see Bumby as much as you like, but I don't want to see you. It just hurts too much. We'll always be friends, and I'll love you till I die. Ever yours, The Cat.
My dearest Hadley, you are everything good and straight and fine and true. You've changed me more than you know and will always be part of everything I am. That's one thing I've learned from this. No one you love is ever truly lost. Ernest.
There are people who say I should have fought harder than I did for my marriage. But in the end, fighting for a love that was already gone felt like trying to live in the ruins of a lost city. In due course, the divorce came through. I watched from a safe distance as Ernest became one of the foremost writers of his generation. He was always hell-bent on creating a myth out of his own life. But under it all, I knew better than anyone that he was still lost, that he slept with the light on or couldn't sleep at all. He had two more sons, both with Pauline, then he left her. He had four wives in all and many lovers. It was a Sunday in July 1961 when I heard that he'd shot himself. It was the all too predictable end of a story he'd been writing all along. There was nothing like those years in Paris after the war. I believe Ernest was his best self then, that I got the very best of him. But to the others, to the strangers, the academics and the acolytes who followed his life with such interest and who believed they knew all about him, I was just the early wife. I was just the Paris wife.